Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. It's not too often that we actually get to review the same chapter twice in one day. And in a way, when Brother Steve asked me whether we should read it again or not, I got thinking about it and said, you know, we are leaky vessels, and what we missed the first time, maybe we'll catch the second time. If not, the points that I make of somebody else's, like Brother Steve's, that I'm going to steal some from, maybe we'll get it the second, the third, the fourth time around. But hopefully, we'll understand just how special this whole book is. It was a very special time in history. And up to this point, I think we need to jump back and take a quick review. We have Daniel. He was a young man at the time. He was taken captive and drugged to Babylon. He was made a eunuch. All that he had been taken away. He was a captive. He was a eunuch. He was a servant. He was a slave. And he was also most likely of the royal family or of the hierarchy of the city, which is why he was taken instead of killed. Only this morning in our discussion, he was made the third ruler in the kingdom by Belshazzar. Then imagine you've just been made the third ruler, and a few hours later, Belshazzar's dead. Where does that leave you? Normally, when kings took over and countries changed, the hierarchy was the first to go. But not in this case. We have Darius going and setting up his kingdom, his rulers, his presidents. And he picks Daniel and two other men to be presidents, if you want to call it that. But why Daniel? You know, Daniel, he's a slave, he's a servant. He's a nobody. He was the head of the magicians. He has no experience ruling. Why choose him? Well, as we've been finding out, Daniel had very unique qualities. As a servant, he didn't have any agenda. He didn't have anything to gain by the choices that he would make. Because at the end of the day, he was still a servant. He was still a slave. He was still a eunuch. And he could not go home. And he was honest. Can you imagine a ruler that was honest? I can't, not in today's day and age. So here we have Darius found somebody he could trust. So that was in verse 3. It says that an excellent spirit was found in him. And that's why he was chosen. As we were told this morning, somebody had whispered in Darius' ear, this is somebody that you need to keep on your side. Then another point, as we read through the kings, who did they get to protect them, to keep them safe? It wasn't people from their own realm. They hired somebody from the outside. So who better to have on his side and give him reason and direction? As we heard last night, this was the beginning of the Silver Kingdom. And we had Daniel, although he was one of the three presidents, he was not necessarily first of the three. Because in verse 3, it says he was contemplating making him first. And that's what, as we were told this morning, started the trouble. But note that it says in the revised version that the king should suffer no loss. In other words, any one of these three men could have done the job, but it was Daniel that was chosen. He was preferred. Why would he be preferred? Do we know what preferred means? It says he was like a star to glitter from afar. He stood out in the political heavens, as it were. His work was unreproachable. It could be seen that he was different, that he was special. Let's reflect on ourselves for a moment. Do we, like Daniel, glitter? Do we shine in our ecclesias? Or are we tarnished? Could we glitter more if we worked a little harder? And the harder question that we need to ask ourselves is, if we're not glittering, why? What have we lost? Do we glitter to the outside world? Do they notice that we are different? And if they don't, why not? If we are accepted into the kingdom with the talents that we have now, what would we glitter at? What could we shine at? Looking ahead to talks that will be given down later on in the week, in Daniel 12, verses 2 and 3, it prophesies that many of them that sleep in the dust shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise, the margin says teaches, shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. They'll be the glittering stars. But let's go back into the fourth verse of chapter 6. The other presidents we know found fault. They found occasion. They found a pretext. It's the same reason that the Pharisees and the scribes had for Christ, a pretext. It was the only thing that could bring them together, and it was the only thing that could bring the presidents and the princes together to find fault with Daniel. Verses 4 and 5 show us that they couldn't find any fault. This reminds us of Christ. And what about ourselves? Can this be said of us also? No fault could be found except in the law concerning his God. Consider all that he did, his work. Then let's think of ourselves. How are we at our work? Are we unreproachable? In all that we say and think and do, are we consistent with the laws of God? Or, as we have heard, is that only for Sunday? Verse 6 tells us that the presidents and the princes assembled themselves together. The word means tumultuously. They didn't just come together and have a meeting. They came together as a mob, yelling and screaming, I would imagine. We have a great idea for you, Darius. You know, this is something you really need to do. You deserve it. This isn't just anything that we're asking. We'd like you to do it for us, please. Would you do us the honor of making this royal decree? Now, Darius was human. You know, who wouldn't like that honor? If somebody came to you and a whole mob, the whole ecclesia, the whole gathering came to you and said, you need to do this, you'd think pretty seriously about it. And Darius, against his better judgment, agreed. He says, sure, I'll sign it. Oh, by the way, we have it right here. It's already written. Everybody's approved it. Oh, we didn't talk to Daniel, but never mind. You know, it's all done. All you have to do is sign it and put your seal on it, and it's done. For 30 days. Now, why 30 days? You know, the princes didn't have that much confidence in their plan. They needed time. So they figured, okay, if we don't catch him on day one, maybe two or three, but yeah, within a month, we'll know he'll do what he says he always does. So it was signed, and it, as we've been told, once it's signed, it can't be changed. Now, there's a interesting connection that we have. The Persians believed that their king was basically the light, the god of light. He was the representative of Ormazd. And then for every light, there has to be a darkness. And Hadad-Rimmon was their god of darkness. And of course, the good and the bad, the light and the dark, they have to fight. So we have the king as the symbol of light, and Hadad-Rimmon, his symbol was the lion. Daniel would have known about this. He would have known about the prophecies of Jeremiah, Amos, Hosea, and the others, and how the symbol of the lion was used. That of an animal that sneaks up, hunts his prey, dashes out of cover, captures it, kills it, and then drags it off to his den to eat. He'd been through that. He'd been dragged off into that captivity. And the point was, this was the law of the Medes and Persians now. And once it was made, there's nothing that can change it. Let's drop down to verse 10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, remember we talked about Daniel and all his life being consistent. That's what had got him to the place he was at. So what do we do if we have a problem? We pray to God for guidance. And that's just what Daniel did. But the situation had greatly changed. Praying to guide could and would have cost him his life. Would he still pray just as before? He still needed guidance, perhaps more now than ever. Why not just shut the window in that upper chamber that was on the roof of his house? Nobody would know. He was the only one up there. He could just shut that window and he could pray to God on his knees in complete humility 3 times a day. But there was a problem. First, God would know. And secondly, Daniel would know. So Daniel made this choice. He remained consistent to his belief and his integrity. His integrity is all that he had. He had his God, he had his religion, he had his prayer. That's all that he had left. And he wasn't going to let the Babylonians take that away from him. From the 9th chapter, because these chapters are, I believe, literally out of order, we should have chapter 6 someplace in between 7, 8, and 9. It's kind of mixed up in there. There's a prayer that's made, but notice the words of this prayer. Then hear thou their prayer and their supplication in heaven, thy dwelling place, and maintain their cause, and forgive thy people that have sinned against thee, and their transgressions, and that they have transgressed against thee, and give them compassion before them who carry them away, that they may have compassion on them. When we look at this prayer, we could only wonder if, as in Christ in his prayer, this sweat was as drops of blood. We see many similarities to Christ as we go through the book of Daniel. Thanksgiving, according to the law of Moses, is the highest form of worship that can ever be offered to God. Whoso offereth praise glorifieth me. What did Daniel have to be thankful for? I'm sure they'll tell us in the 9th chapter. But he was alive, and his people still had hope. So let's go to the 11th verse. They found him praying, just as they thought they would. We're told that it's possible that there are some outside stairs to his upper chamber, so they could sneak up on him from behind and find him praying. And then they go back to Darius, much as little children tattletaling on their siblings. With glee, they come to him and say, "Oh, Darius, you remember that guy Daniel? That Daniel, that captive guy? That guy that you were so impressed with? He was, that shining star of yours? Guess what he did? And we caught him. We were all there. He was up there praying. And he wasn't praying to you. He was praying to his God." Not you. His God. Now this should sound real familiar to us. We go back a few chapters. Daniel's 3 friends. The same princes. They went to Nebuchadnezzar and did the same thing. And Nebuchadnezzar blew a gasket, basically. Had the furnace heated, threw him in, because he didn't understand. Well, if it works once, it'll work twice, right? That's common sense. But it didn't work with Darius. Darius saw right through it. He was a different person. He had respect to Daniel. So we're told in verse 14, then the king heard these words, he was sore displeased with himself. And look at the word sore displeased. It takes a completely different meaning to what we have today. It says, and he stank. He stank. Now, this is the king of the world, and he stank. And he was very displeased at what had happened. He knew he'd been tricked, but he couldn't do anything about it. But he knew that, and immediately it says he set to deliver him anyhow. But this was a royal law, they reminded him. You can't do that. Nope. There's no do-overs. You don't get to back up. You've got to do what you said you're going to do. But he still labored until the going down of the sun to deliver him. They, the princes, had given him a time. And then, just as Christ, they threw Daniel into the tomb, into the darkness, and sealed it with a signet and the king's ring so it couldn't be opened. So we look at verse 16, and the king still hasn't given up. The king commanded Daniel to be brought and cast into the lion's den, but the king says, Daniel, the God whom thou servest continually, even Darius knew that he served him continually, he will deliver you. Now this is the ruler of the world saying, I'm going to do this because I have to do this, but it's not going to affect you. You have your faith. You've served him continually. You've been very consistent. So it's done. And then you figure Darius would go back to his palace and spend the night and then come down in the morning and find out what happened. But Darius didn't do that. He was concerned. That was, from the context, his friend. He didn't sleep at all that night. He was worried. He didn't have music brought in to put him to sleep. You know, it's kind of like what we've read about Pilate's wife. Pilate's wife told Pilate, don't have anything to do with the condemnation of that man. I've had a dream concerning him. So what does Darius do in the morning? He runs to the cave as soon as the sun was up. It says to be in pain. It was a time of anguish. He runs and he calls to Daniel, servant of Daniel, servant of the living God. The living God. Even Darius knew that it was a living God. Now the question was, are you okay, Daniel? And what's the answer that he gets back from Daniel? It says, O king, live forever. It's the same response that Nebuchadnezzar had. But this was different. Was Daniel inferring the possibility, maybe, of eternal life for Darius? I don't know. Maybe it would be something to comment on later on. Daniel in verse 22 says, God shut the mouth of the lions. Paul says in Hebrews in the 33rd verse, because he was faithful. And in the 23rd verse it says, that because he was faithful in what he had done, which was right, and showed his faith in God, that there was a reason he had showed his faith in God. It says, "In for as much as before him, that is before God, innocency was found in me, and God knew it." And Darius, you know that too. That's why the mouth of the lions have been shut. And just as Christ could not be held, because evil was not found in him, Daniel was taken out of the lion's den. And the king was exceeding glad for him. Not just glad, exceeding glad. Can't you see Darius' character? Can't you see how different he is from Nebuchadnezzar? And then, of course, we know what happened. He threw all his enemies and their wives and their children. It says in the law that he would visit the iniquity of the fathers and the children unto the third and fourth generation. It says that in Exodus. But in Deuteronomy, there's one sentence or phrase that's added: of them that hate me. And it's only when the wives and the children become responsible because they were going to follow in the way of their parents that it happened to them. So what was the final result of Daniel's deliverance? Another decree. I make a decree that men fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. Justice was done for his three friends earlier. He is the living God, the author and giver of life. He is steadfast forever, and all things change, but he is unchangeable. And his kingdom, not man's, he governs in the world of man. His kingdom shall not be destroyed. His dominion is without end, everlasting. Everlasting dominion by God. He delivereth them that are in danger and in bondage. He rescueth those who have fallen into the hands of the enemy. He worketh signs and wonders in the heavens. He rules in the kingdoms of men and wonders upon the earth, showing he rules over men in the political powers. He hath delivered Daniel. What more could we ask for by way of proof? If God is in our hearts, he will deliver us.
I'd like to thank Brother Steve for his introductory remarks to Daniel chapter 6. We now have a little time allotted for some comments and discussion. Brother Jim.
Brother Chairman, brethren and sisters, we see in this chapter, Daniel is once again reintroduced to us as a leader in this kingdom of Darius. And we're not told why his co-workers were so jealous of him. It could have been anti-Semitic individuals, and that may well have had a role. It could have been they were jealous of Daniel because Darius was friends with him and was going to promote him, and that probably would have a role too. But the verses go into the integrity of Daniel in a lot of detail, and I suspect the reason they do that was Daniel's problem. He was honest. Here you have people in government collecting the revenues from all over the world, coming to these three individuals that's in charge of it, and there's one guy that's scrupulously honest. We know people in government. Look at with Charlie Rangel this week. You know, he's been in government 40 years. He's lined his pockets like most other politicians. Who's going to find out? It takes a very unique person. It takes a unique person to not take advantage of the situation. And here was somebody that was unwilling to take advantage of the situation. And the conclusion is that guy's got to go. And so we see the responsibility we have with our co-workers, not only to be righteous ourselves, but to give them a guilty conscience if they're not being righteous. He was friends with the king. He was scrupulously honest. We've got to get rid of this guy. And so they came up with the only situation they could suppose, and that is to get him in the service of his God. I don't know how true it is, but Josephus, in commenting on the fact that Daniel was delivered from the lions, he suggests that the satraps, or the fellow governors, suspected that Darius had overfed the lions secretly. He was working all day to try to figure out a way to save Daniel. And they knew this. And so Josephus suggests that they suspected that Darius has overfed these beasts for the 12 hours prior to throwing Daniel in order to spare Daniel. And so Josephus says, as a proof of that, Darius says, fine, if you think they're overfed, if you think that's why they didn't touch Daniel, let's put it to the test. Let's throw you guys in and see if it's true. And we're told that ere they hit the bottom of the pit, the lions had mastery over them. So, once again, we see the problems that Daniel faced every day with the same trials, his integrity. And do we expect to pass a test and get away scot-free? Our life here is designed to be tried. And we see this over and over again in this book.
You know, Brother Jim was touching something there with the politicians. You look at the law of the Medes and Persians, and you look at the government of the Medes and Persians. They were honest. They kept their word. When they made a decree, it had to be carried out. You look at America and Canada, that their governments, if they were part of that, the metals on that image, I mean, they lie through their teeth. They always have, and I think that's what we see with the image and the kingdoms of men. You know, that's why we need the righteous rule of the rock of Christ. I mean, the king, he had to keep his word because of this decree. He didn't sleep all night. He ran to the tomb lamenting and wailing, Daniel, are you alive? And he said, was your Elohim, was your God able to deliver you from the mouth of the lion? Obviously, unlike Daniel, he didn't study the books. He didn't look back in history, because he would have known what kind of a God Daniel really had if he had have studied his books. Are there any other comments? Brother Curtis?
I don't think there's ever been a man who was a leader of two different world empires. It's impossible for anybody to survive one empire coming through and taking over another one and being the ruler from both kingdoms. It's just amazing, and that really shows that God is in control of what was happening. And that's really one of the biggest lessons that we see in Daniel, is that God controls the nations. And he was protecting Daniel, and that's the only way that Daniel could have been the third ruler of one kingdom, survive and become one of the top leaders of the next kingdom. The other thing that kind of strikes you on Daniel in the lion's den is he was, you know, if Brother Jim is right, he was basically saved by Darius and God. God had to be on his side, but also he was saved from the Babylon line. You know, symbolic line by God and Darius. And Darius seems like a pretty wise, wise king for someone who's is not associated with God. And at the end of the chapter, I was impressed with what he said. He recognized that it wasn't his kingdom that was going to survive, but it was God's kingdom, and he calls it a kingdom, recognizing that it had to have a king. The Jews, they didn't even have a nation. And so, that's for a king to recognize that, he seems to be very wise and mature and even humble.
Brother Len?
This certainly is the dare to be a Daniel chapter. You know, that we so often hear that phrase. And so I just throw out a question to everyone, you know, to ask yourselves, you know, what instances in your life, you know, in our lives, do we have, you know, to stand up like Daniel did, to when we are dared to be that Daniel? You know, we talked the other day, you know, about, you know, how do we become fully persuaded, or how do we get to the point of having the strength of conviction that the Daniel's three friends did? Well, it's through little trials of daring to be a Daniel, whether it be, you know, in our workplace, in our home, in our ecclesia, wherever it may be. We have these little trials, and it's only through these little trials that we are able to muster up the strength of conviction and the faith to have that godly self-control that's required when the test comes. So we all can really look at this, and it's nice when we have the young ones up there and singing Dare to be Daniel, but it's something that needs to be thought about. You know, it's part of our self-examination.
Brother Fred?
I couldn't help but be struck at the when we went through the British Museum, in seeing the things which date from this time, the massive gates of the city that Daniel no doubt passed through. They look like bank vault gates. The pins of the doors of the gates, and it had bronze or brass washers stacked up to take the load. It's the same technology used today, the special machines that I worked on, and things of taking heavy loads and all of this, the implements and the things from that time, very much similar to what we work on today. But it brings the Bible to life in the British Museum in seeing these things. The good book on it was the British Museum Bible in Hand by Brother Janaway, and it's online. There's copies of it. And if you ever get a chance to take a tour and you plan it out ahead of time, and you can see these things. But it brought it to mind this morning as I was giving the talk, and I just on the cuff had mentioned the similarity with Daniel's trial by fire in the fern, and with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and after that time, then he comes into the prophecies which he had that were revealed to him, and in the same manner, John. And as Dr. Thomas brought out in page 152 of volume 1 of Eureka, that Domitian sought to destroy John and had him put through into a pot of boiling oil. And Domitian thought that maybe there was some magical thing that saved him in there, but a very similar thing. And out of that, he still wasn't let off the hook by Domitian. He was banished to Patmos, where he wrote the books of the Apocalypse, as we know, and these signs and there, and how their signs are tied in together. It's interesting how God has preserved these to our days and for our learning, to be able to look at these signs from Daniel 11 and 12 and the various signs and the corresponding chapters in Revelation and how they apply and are working right up to our own present time in the end. Thank you.
Brother Jerry?
No, I think to me the prophecy of Daniel is pretty unique in the fact that Daniel doesn't say, "Thus saith the Lord," like the rest of the prophets did. Daniel was an interpreter of visions and interpreter of dreams and other things like that. And his was unique and different. And if you notice the first six chapters, Daniel writes in the third person because he's interpreting dreams of other people. And the remaining chapters are written in the first person because he gets direct visions to himself and about future things that were going to happen and not about some prince or king or anything. And in this chapter 6 that we're reading, Daniel is probably in his 80s. He's an old man by this time. And he was all just like the speaker said, all he had left was his creator and the faith that he had in that creator and what he had promised. And he was consistent and he kept that faith, and he was probably in Babylon the whole 70 years that the captivity was there. So he's a real character to emulate and to think about, and he is, to me, different in several ways from all the other prophets that we look at.